one of your early controversies on your Maple Leafs bingo card. Congratulations. I mean, I don't know if I'd say that it's a... I would necessarily say that it's a situation that warrants too much concern at this point. Although we do know that even given a small sample size, Leafs Nation certainly isn't afraid to overreact. But given Freddie Anderson's somewhat rocky start to the season, given the fact that Jack Campbell was in goal for the Leafs' win on Saturday, I think there were some people, Richard Deitch, who might have thought that Jack Campbell would get the call today. Let's be clear, if the Leafs are going to do anything this year, Freddie Anderson's going to have to play more games than Jack Campbell. I think that's just the way it is. But there's no doubt that given how this season is starting out, and given the fact the games are coming fast and furious, I got to think that Freddie is going to be Freddie's really going to be on the spot these next couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, and good to be with you, Jeff. I'll first guess here and say I would start Jack Campbell tonight. I would have started him tonight. I don't know if it was Elliot who said this or Brian Burke, but this season has to be one, Jeff, given the shortness of it, 56 games, where I think you change up some of your conventional thinking when it comes to goaltending. And if you have someone you think can get a little bit hot, even if it's the backup, I think you supersede whatever ramifications, if that's the right word, in terms of having to manage your number one goalie, who happens to be in a free agent year, and play a little bit of the hot hand. I thought Campbell was excellent against Ottawa, and I would play him. Again, I'm with you. I don't think the Leafs ultimately can go where they want to go unless Freddie Anderson has a good year. But I'm not sure I understand heading back to Freddie tonight. You've paid and you've sort of made the indication that you think Campbell is a backup that you can trust. I'm not saying he's 1A, but he's certainly a pretty solid 2. And I'd like to see him get more games. And to me, maybe it was Jim Ralph who said this. I think Jim Ralph said on the radio broadcast, I was listening to him and Bowen, he said something to the effect of, this is a year where I think you don't think about egos for any position and play the hot hand, even if it's an unconventional play. And he thought that if Freddie didn't play great and Campbell played great, you should roll with Campbell. And I agree. So I would have liked to have seen him be in the net tonight. But your larger point is correct. I don't think this team can get to where it wants to go without Freddie being very good this year.
I wonder if maybe this would have been a little different decision too, if the two Oilers games that are coming up this week weren't back to back. If it was back to back, then maybe that changes the equation a little bit here. But yeah, if nothing else, it kind of reinforces the idea that I think you almost can't read too much into any moves right now. I mean, you just can't. And I think I'm looking at the NBA, and similarly to the NHL, it's going to be the similar type of schedule. Look at the results we've seen. We saw the New York Knicks beat the Celtics by 30 points. Do you ever think you were going to see that this year?
No.
There's just a lot of really, really odd stuff happening in the NBA, and a lot of it is, COVID protocols and things of that nature. But as I'm watching the NBA, I'm really thinking that hockey fans are going to have to, and it's going to be hard, because it's the Canadian division, and every point, you're going to be bleeding out every point. But I'm looking at what's happening in the NBA, and I think we just need to be prepared for a lot of weird stuff. Yeah, that's just the way. And you can't overreact to it. You just can't overreact to it.
I agree. And I'll give you another example. Baseball had its own example with the Marlins this year, Jeff. Nobody expected them to get to the playoffs and be as good. This is, you know, the reason why analytics are such is that you have a significant enough base of numbers where you feel that you can make evaluations off this large base of numbers that has been consistent over the years. For a 56-game hockey season, there are no analytics that compare to that. So one might say, well, I'm going to base Joe Thornton and how he might do off the last couple of years. Well, my counter would be, well, Joe Thornton's never been in a 56-game season. So if you really wanted to do the deepest analytics, you know, tell me how he was in his first 56 games. Like, tell me his ice time in those first 56. So this is where I think you're going to see these very random kind of game results. Yep. Where one night, I'm with you, one night the Knicks are seriously going to look like the worst franchise in the NBA, and then the next night they're going to be competitive with like the Sixers or the Bucks. It's one of the things I'm kind of interested in tonight with the Raptors against the Mavericks, because this is actually a pretty... Mavericks have some talent. I'm not sure I'd call them a great team, but they have talent. They certainly have one of the five or six best players in the league. So I'm just curious to see, you know, how the Raptors sort of look against this team, because I've had trouble figuring out how they're going to play this year, and I think some of it has to do, like you said, just the randomness of everything, from some people missing games with COVID to some players playing well on certain nights. And maybe, Jeff, like maybe some of this, and we just can't even factor it in, maybe some of this is just sort of whatever the mental, whatever is going on sort of mental health-wise with all these guys, just in terms of the adjustments off their normal schedule. You know what I mean? You have no idea how every individual player just reacts to what is, once again, an abnormal situation. And I think that's ultimately results in some abnormal results.
Yeah, having said that, I think, you know, we'll know more about the Raptors this week. They've got Dallas, and then they've got a couple of games against Miami. They will have...
Yeah, I'm legit not, teams.
I do not feel any better about the Raptors now than I did a week ago. I don't feel any worse.
Can't feel worse, though.
I don't feel any worse. They beat a team that wasn't very good. That's fine. You know, if
I feel better about Chris Boucher. It feels like that might be... It feels like we may be getting a pretty decent season out of him, but then... Like you, I can give you five guys where I'm like, I mean, I don't know if Aaron Baines is ever going to get out of whatever's going on with him. And Norm Powell continues to be up and down. And Pascal still has to prove some stuff in late game situations. And so, yeah, I'm with you. This will be an interesting week because they're going to play some decent teams.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Boucher is a great story. I'm not, you know, I don't know if I'm necessarily... If I'm necessarily counting on that to continue, again, there are a lot of aberrations this year. But we'll know. You're right. Well, I mean, we'll know more about the Raptors after those games against the Heat. That'll be a measuring stick, and also Dallas as well. We will have the Jets and Leafs tonight. Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet will join us to break down the Jets. In case you didn't hear, Patrick Laine will not be in the lineup for the Jets today, or tonight, I should say. He's out with an upper body injury. You already know the Leafs are going to dress seven defensemen. Mikko Lehtinen will make his NHL debut. Aaron Dell, in case you missed this, was claimed on waivers by the Devils. And Jason Spezza cleared waivers after his agent basically told teams that don't bother claiming him on waivers because he's going to retire.
Genius move by the agent, I thought.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I wonder how it's going over in the NHL office. We'll ask Elliot Friedman about that. I'm not entirely certain. Look, Jason Spezza can do what he wants. He can do what he wants. He's been a longtime servant. I'm not entirely certain that... I'm not entirely certain that's above board, to be honest. You know, if you claim my client, he's going to retire. I don't know if that's necessarily the... I don't know if that's necessarily the intent of the waiver process.
Skirt of the rules. I mean, let's say he doesn't say that. How many teams do you think are interested in a Jason Spezza at this point in his career?
I don't know. I at this point, given the fact that that five goalies have been claimed on waivers so far, and I understand they're goalies. I think teams are looking to claim just about anything, but we can talk to Friedge about that. Again, the main news for tonight with the Jets coming into town is that Patrick Laine is not in the lineup. He did not practice yesterday. He stepped in the ice today briefly and was off. That is with an upper body injury. So Patrick Laine will not be in the lineup for the Jets tonight. The Jets are playing only their second game of the year. So they've had a little bit of time to work on things after that overtime win over the Calgary Flames. So they should come in. I would imagine for the Jets, I haven't looked at their schedule, but I've got to imagine this is probably the going to be the slowest period of the year for them, because they've now had they were on the ice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They had 4 days off basically. So we'll talk to Ken Weeb about that. The Bills, of course, are off to the AFC Championship after their 17-3 win over the Baltimore Ravens. You know, it seems to me that almost everything we said the Bills had to do in that game, they did. And I think they were also aided, frankly, by the fact that, whatever Baltimore was doing on that run of games to get them to where they were now, they didn't seem to have too many answers. I'll tell you what. I don't pretend to understand everything about NHL coaching, but the more the season has gone on, the more I'm thinking that Brian Daboll, the Bills' offensive coordinator, he needs to be a head coach, because they do a lot of smart things with their offense.
The only thing, the last part I 100% agree with. They do a lot of smart things with their offense. Here's the only thing it's my only caveat on this. It doesn't always transfer when the offensive sort of coordinator genius transfers over into a head coaching role. So Brian Daboll may turn out to be a great head coach, but you know what I'm saying, Jeff? A lot of times, like, that skill set is really specific to that skill set. And when you become a head coach, you know, you really are tasked with like a much larger CEO management position. Andy Reid is one of those guys that's been able to pull it off, where he's been a phenomenal offensive guru and at the same time can be the management CEO. But I'm with you. I thought their game plan against the Ravens was phenomenal. I felt that they were really sort of just good about changing up whatever the Ravens expected. You know, it was with that one stretch where they went 13 or 14 passes in a row. But the play of the game was the interception. I mean, that to me turned everything around momentum-wise. Bills needed a big play at that moment. Obviously, Lamar going out was huge, but that is a very, very hot momentum team. I thought their defense played really, really well. And, you know, now heading into Kansas City, and obviously the Chiefs should be favored, with the Mahomes concussion, Jeff, you know, who knows? Only the Chiefs really know how hurt he is or was. And, again, you have to make the Chiefs the favorite in that game, but everything I have seen now from the last couple weeks, the Bills have been able to win sort of different kinds of games, which I think is such a good indicator of that team. My sense heading into the AFC Championship, though, I think that's a shootout game. I think that's going to be a high-scoring game. And if you're the Bills, I think you just have to hope that maybe you can get the ball last, because Bills don't really have a running game to control the clock and keep Mahomes off the field. And so I wonder if really the only way they could ultimately try to beat him would be to outscore them, which admittedly is probably the hardest thing to do in football.
Yeah, you're right. Obviously, everything will depend on Patrick Mahomes. Everything will depend, I think, too, on what Kansas City's approach is to the Bills. And one thing we've seen about the Bills is, and it's not just Lamar Jackson. This is the second time, you know, they in 13 months that they pretty much saddled Lamar Jackson. They have done okay, right? They have done okay controlling explosive type running quarterbacks. And Kyler Murray beat them, but he didn't beat them with his legs. You know, Lamar beat him
on a prayer.
Exactly. Yeah. Lamar Jackson last year had 40 yards rushing against the Bills in that game. I mean, they did a nice job. He had 34 yards rushing. He had less than 40 yards rushing. So I'm wondering if there are elements of that, understanding that Patrick Mahomes is not the same thing as Lamar Jackson. He's not. They're a different type. Patrick Mahomes can make things happen with his feet, yeah, with
just
his legs.
A more accurate, he's a more accurate passer, too.
Exactly,
And the offense, well, I like the Ravens' offense, and it's different, and they can sort of pound. The Chiefs' offense is just like, you know, it's a high-tech video game. It's just nothing. I don't think there's anything else like it in the league, actually. It's just it's hard to defend.
Yeah, so it'll be intriguing to see how they
They were in that first game, though. I'm looking at it now. You know, 23-17 with 6:30 left. Now, this was in Buffalo, and the Chiefs ultimately got a late field goal to win 26-17. But, you know, they were in that game. And I would think even in a loss, Jeff, I'd have to think that playing the Chiefs earlier in the year is more of an advantage for the Bills than it is for the Chiefs. Just hear me out on this, because I think if you don't see that offense of the Chiefs, I think that just the speed of that offense and the speed of their skill players, I feel like is hard to replicate in practice. And so, if nothing else, I feel like the Bills at least have seen them on a field. They'll have a sense, and that to me would be an advantage for the Bills. But you know, I mean, if you're being as much as I would love to see the Bills win, if you're being honest, it's Kansas City at home with a chance to go back to the Super Bowl. That's a very, very hard game to win.
Yeah, and I think that this may be a game where not having that running attack, I mean, what, the first half they had 25 passes to one run. Not having that running attack, I think, may come back to hurt them a little bit against Kansas City. I mean, at least show the running attack. You know, I know that Sean McDermott said, well, we actually planned on running more than we did, but, you know, they took it away from us. Yeah, I don't know about that necessarily.
Well, they're also, you know, they are down. They're down a back. Down Zach Moss.
They don't have Zach Moss. Yeah. Devin, and, you know, I think we talked earlier in the year that ultimately we expected to see Zach Moss become kind of the focal point of that running attack. And that's not the case. So, but anyhow, all that aside, the Bills are going into Kansas City.
The NFC game,
we'll see Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Tom Brady.
Who's Tom Brady and the Bucks. And we'll talk to Amy Trask about this. Look, they're both great quarterbacks. Both obviously going to the Hall of Fame. How big do you think beating Tom Brady would be for Aaron Rodgers, though, right now? He's got one Super Bowl. And I think he's a terrific quarterback. He should probably be the MVP of the league this year, quite frankly. Maybe he will be the MVP of the league this year. But if he doesn't win this game, I don't know, man. I think he needs, if he gets another Super Bowl win, he kind of moves out of that pack of quarterbacks just under Brady, I think, anyhow.
Yeah, listen, Brady doesn't need anything. I mean, his legacy is secure. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. Honestly, it's at this point even hard to argue for Montana or Unitas or anybody else. It's just I feel like it's a losing battle. This year, though, is really massively important for Aaron Rodgers, and to me, you hit on the exact thing. There really is a difference, Jeff, when you're talking about the all-time quarterbacks of winning one Super Bowl versus multiple Super Bowls. And all the people you think of, who generally speaking are on that Mount Rushmore, like Brady or Elway or Bradshaw or Staubach. Let's forget about Marino for a second just because he's an oddity. They're all multiple Super Bowl winners. Like, they all won in different seasons. And I do think that separates them from the conversation with other quarterbacks who are Hall of Famers. So to me, Rodgers has been the MVP of the league. He's at home. He might never have another chance, to win a Super Bowl. To beat Brady would be, I think, for legacy and narrative, huge for him. So I think for him, it's got more meaning. It's not to say that, obviously, Brady and the Bucks win, they play a home Super Bowl, which is just incredible to think about. But it's just different, Jeff. Like, I almost feel like at this point, Brady, if anybody had any doubts about Brady going to Tampa Bay and and like what that move meant, and was it Belichick or Brady? Like, I feel like Brady's already won that argument. Like, getting to the conference final, like, he won. But I think Aaron Rodgers, the legacy part of the equation, one more Super Bowl, I think, just changes so many people's perception of the guy. And that's going to be a fascinating game, because it's two good teams and obviously, you know, two first ballot all-time Hall of Famers.
Joe Biscaglia is a Bills beat reporter with The Athletic. We'll break down the Bills' win over the Ravens. Look ahead to the AFC Championship against Kansas City. It's Writer's Block for Monday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to Writer's Block for a Monday. Jeff Blair, Richard Deitch. Ken Wiebe joins us later on. Matt Devlin as well. Elliot Friedman, Amy Trask. Lots ahead. Did you catch? I think Devlin's kid was actually traded this week.
Wow.
Ian was traded from the, I believe the St. Michael's, from St. Michael's Buzzers to the BC Junior Hockey League or something like that. Because I saw Matt retweeted a let's go tweet. So anyhow, so we'll talk to Matt about that.
Did one of the teams get picks in 2022, 2024, 2026?
No idea. No idea. Let's bring in Joe Biscaglia, covers the Bills for The Athletic. The Bills are off to the AFC title game against the Kansas City Chiefs, as we were all predicting at the start of the year. How you doing, Joe?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I was looking at the Bills' performance against running quarter. I'm going to call them running quarterbacks in air quotes, going into this weekend's game. And I mean, two times now, they've done a really good job against Lamar Jackson. I mentioned Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray didn't beat them necessarily with his legs. He beat them with the Hail Mary pass. Now, I understand that not all quarterbacks are created equal, and you know, everybody nowadays just kind of seems to assume that a quote-unquote running quarterback, that one size fits all. Is there something, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is a better passer, I would think, than those two guys, first of all. But secondly, are there things they did against Lamar Jackson defensively that would be applicable against Patrick Mahomes? Or is he just an entirely different, you know, different kettle of fish?
I think he's an entirely different sort of quarterback that they're preparing for, because, you know, that defensive game plan that they put together against the Ravens is unlike anything that they did really at any other time in the Sean McDermott era, outside of the game against the Ravens back in 2019. And they did have some little variations from what they did last year. But if you remember, the Titans, who upset the Ravens in the playoffs last year when the Ravens were the top seed, they actually alluded to the Bills game for kind of setting the blueprint of how they inevitably defended Lamar Jackson and helped them pull the upset in that game. So I think for what Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier put together with this game plan, potentially some carryover. I think the main carryover from that week to this week is that you want to confine the quarterback to the pocket, because as soon as they're dropping back to pass and they break that containment, they break that little bubble, then all hell can break loose for your defense, whether it be with Lamar being able to get it down the field with his legs 40 yards for a touchdown just out of nowhere, even though there was nothing to be had downfield, or with Mahomes, it's getting the defensive players to react to him getting outside of the pocket, drifting towards him, which takes them out of their individual zones, and then allowing him to throw it over the top and break your heart that way. So So yeah, that is the common bond between the two. But in terms of the actual coverage, I think they're going to try and do something a little bit differently this week.
Joe, we'll obviously get more questions about the Chiefs. I want to spend one moment or one sort of question on just how amazing this run has been. You're in Buffalo. Can you give us just a sense of like how the community sort of feels about this team in the moment, how they're reacting? I don't know if you know this, Joe. I think most in the audience know this. I lived in Buffalo for 6 years, mm-hmm. and I went to school there, so I have obviously a great feel for the city when the team was doing well. But it had been such a long stretch prior to mm-hmm. this Josh Allen era, and one of the million things about COVID, which is awful, is that the fans cannot appreciate this as much as you wish they could. I mean, Bill Stadium yesterday would have had 80,000 inside and 100,000 people outside the stadium. Can you get a feel for like what this has meant to the community?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, I know you spent some time here, and it's a special place. And the fans... reaction to what is happening with the Bills football organization oftentimes gives the city a vibe, whether it's a good or bad thing. They're so closely intertwined. And while it is disappointing that the full capacity of fans can't actually be there, and I'm sure a lot of people are bummed out about that, the fervor around town is just unbelievable. Like I've lived in Buffalo for 32 out of my 34 years. I've been covering the team for the last 11. This is unlike any sort of atmosphere that I can even remember. I mean, the only thing that kind of came close was when they had that hot start back in 2011 and upset the Patriots in September for the first time since Brady took over, basically. And that was really the closest time to where it felt like this. And while it is disappointing that the stadium can't have a full capacity, I did kind of take an opportunity on Sunday or on Saturday night to look around, and especially right after the Taron Johnson interception for a touchdown, the place went absolutely berserk. And the cool thing about there being a limited capacity there is when there's a full out crowd and you're looking around, you can't really see anything. They all just kind of like blend together for the most part. You can't see individual reactions, but the thing that was so cool about that moment was that you could see there was so much space between people. You can see the individual reactions. You could see people leaping into each other's arms, and you can see them, reacting the way that they were, the arms being raised for as long as they were. Like, that part of it was really unique and something you'll never forget. But it's been one of a kind. And this city has been dying for something like this. And they finally got it.
Hey, we know Patrick Mahomes is in concussion protocol. What exactly is concussion protocol in the NFL? And is there a day this week where, there has to be some indication as to whether or not he will be ready to play on the weekend?
Well, yeah, I think for the most part, the way in every single situation is different, so you can't really paint it with one brush here, but usually if the player is able to be on the field for practice and gets in that limited session on Wednesday, it's a pretty good sign, but that's not even infallible because there's sometimes that guys practice the entire week and then they're still out for the game. If he doesn't get on the field by Friday, I would say it's probably going to be pretty tough. Just because then they would have to make a determination by Saturday at 4 PM about whether or not to call up a second quarterback to back up Chad Henne. So from that perspective, we would have to know probably by then. But if he gets on the practice field on Wednesday, Thursday, then it it could be trending that way, but like I said, it's just so totally up in the air because it's not even the team up to the team's discretion. He has to go through a baseline test based on a neurological test that he took before the season, so he has to have matching results, and then he has to get in limited aerobic exercise, and then he'll be from that point. If he goes through that without any hitches, then he'll be able to get on the field for actual practice in a limited setting, and then he has to be cleared by an independent neurologist. So it's not a team employee, which is important to this. And so then those are the steps he has to take. But yeah, it's one of those where we just don't know at this point because concussions are scary. We all know it. They're really tough to look at when they actually happen, especially when Patrick Mahomes was stumbling around the way that he was right after that play. And really, what happens the night after is unpredictable at best, too. So yeah, it's just kind of a wait and see mode right now.
Joe, you know, one of the great discussion points of the upcoming game is, like, stylistically, how is it going to play? I just was mentioning this to Blair before. My thought is that I think the Bills are not necessarily set up, or they're certainly not at their best to try to bleed the clock and win a game through the ground. As constructed, I don't see them doing that. So obviously, then how do you beat the Chiefs? Well, you got to use your best assets, which is Josh Allen, the great skill receivers that he has, and I think try to outscore him. The problem, of course, is that, you know, you're going against a video game. How do you outscore a video game? But that's sort of my look, is that I think the way for victory for the Bills is to outscore them and perhaps get lucky to get the ball last. How do you see it? How do you envision this game to play out?
Yeah, pretty similarly to you, because the whole bleeding clock principle doesn't play into the Bills' best interest here, just like you said. I mean, they are at their best when they are trying to put up the video game numbers of their own, and they were doing it a lot at the end of the season, and that's what has helped spur on this now 8-game winning streak that they're on. They have just been so proficient at getting the ball down the field, interrupting any sort of coverage scheme that the defense has for them, whether it be man coverage, whether it be blitz heavy, whether it be zone coverage. Like Josh Allen, Brian Daboll, Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Cole Beasley, they've always had an answer for what the team has been willing to do, or what the defense has been trying to do to them. I'm right there with you. I think this should be an opportunity for the passing offense to get right, because over the last couple of weeks they've played some two really good defenses in the Colts and Ravens, but the passing offense just hasn't been there on a consistent basis. I think this is an opportunity for them to really show what they're about, and you know, they're probably going to have to put up a ton of points. It might be the first team to 40 winds up getting this game, but you know, it should be pretty fun. Hopefully the weather doesn't crush the potential offensive output of this game, because it could be really fun with how these two teams are schemed, with how well the quarterbacks have played this year. But yeah, I think it's all going to depend on how the Bills defend Patrick Mahomes, and if they're going to channel something differently than what they did last time, which was to allow the Chiefs to run a bunch and then they couldn't had trouble tackling, or if they'll try to do some things a little bit differently just to get some more heat on Mahomes to try and to get the ball out of his hands that way. It's going to be a very interesting chess match, to say the least.
Now, it's also there's a report out there right now that Brian Daboll is staying in Buffalo after missing out in the Chargers job. And Joe, I'm just wondering, what do we need to know about him? Because, you know, you hear a lot about him. Obviously, look, he's been a head coaching candidate. He's been a candidate for a number of jobs, so obviously people are impressed with him. But what is it about he and Josh Allen that has turned into such a good partnership?
Yeah, it's been a bond above all a coach to player relationship. Like Daboll is big on FaceTime throughout the off season, and because he thinks that's a bit more personal than calls, and he does it with a lot of his players. But Josh, he and Josh have really just struck that sort of friendship, that sort of working relationship, to where they are completely honest with one another. They know they're working together for a greater purpose, as opposed to just being very selfish. And those two guys in particular have helped really fuel what the Bills have been able to do here. Daboll is all his players love him. And that is a big thing, especially when you're trying to establish a new culture, which a lot of these head coaching spots are in desperate need of, really. So that all does it. And there's also the development of Allen as well, and how he has basically reformulated his entire offense to best fit what Allen does, what types of receivers that he looks for and that help him become the best version of him, the types of routes that he likes throwing, simplifying how to figure out defenses pre-snap and what to look for post-snap to where he can operate on such an incredibly high level, and where he was able to take the jump from his second year to his third year. So it's not all Daboll. A lot of this has to do with the work that Josh Allen has put in, but I don't know if that relationship isn't what it is. I don't know if Josh Allen is what he is today. And that's as good of an endorsement for Brian Daboll as any.
Joe, one last one for me. And I realize we got a lot of miles to go before this one, but I was thinking last night, can you imagine the Buffalo Bills return to the Super Bowl for the first time since 1994? And as they look on the other side of the field, it's Tom Brady.
I kid you not. Before the playoffs started, I said the same thing to my fiance. I'm like, just watch this thing actually happen to where that, this is a franchise this year. They have been exercising so many of their demons. Like, they won the AFC East for the first time since 95. They won their first playoff game since 1995. They hosted their first playoff game for the first time in a long time. They've made it to the AFC Championship game for the first time since 1994, which they inevitably played the Chiefs in that game to get to the Super Bowl. So the only thing left for them to exercise is to beat Tom Brady and to win a Super Bowl. And it's kind of fitting. And Gronk is on that team too, and he's a local guy. And he was always kind of thought to be the one that got away here in Western New York, because they drafted Terrell Troop, a nose tackle, ahead of Rob Gronkowski, because they were concerned about Gronkowski's injury history, when lo and behold, Terrell Troop wound up playing, I think, 3 years in the league and had to retire due to injury. And then LeSean McCoy is over there too, which is just another little aside to that matchup. So yeah, I have been thinking about that quite a bit, to answer your question. It would be fitting and quite poetic, really, for how this whole season has kind of happened, if they get there. Big step to go before they actually do, like you said.
Good stuff, Joe. Really appreciate you. And this should be a lot of fun this weekend. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thank you.
Joe Biscali is a Bills beat reporter with The Athletic. Bills 17-3 winners over the Ravens. They are off to face the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game on Sunday. Of course, it'll be Tom Brady against Aaron Rodgers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Green Bay Packers in the NFC game on Sunday. Amy Trask, NFL analyst with CBS Sports, joins us in the 4 o'clock hour to break down those two matchups. And we've got a big 3 o'clock hour. Ken Wiebe, Jets beat reporter with Sportsnet.ca, will join us. The Jets will not have Patrick Laine in the lineup tonight when they take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Matt Devlin, Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. The Raps completing a two-game sweep of the Hawks. They're 4-8. They're only a game back of the... I'm sorry, the Hornets. They're 4-8, only a game back of the Hawks. They're 10th in the East. And they will take on the Dallas Mavericks tonight ahead of a couple of games against the Miami Heat this week. So, early in the year, but my sense is we will get a better read on what the Raptors are about this week after those games against the Miami Heat, which I would suggest are still a bit of a measuring stick for this team. This is Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So indeed, Matt Devlin's kid has indeed been traded to the Coquitlam Express for the BC Junior Hockey League from the St. Michael's Buzzers. There you go, Deitch. I don't know if I've had somebody on whose son was traded like just a couple of days after. Well, Colby Rasmus's dad was on just after the Blue Jays acquired Colby Rasmus. That didn't work out very well, actually. Matt Devlin, Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet, joins us at 3 o'clock. We mentioned the Raptors completed their two-game sweep of the Hornets with a 116-113 win Saturday. Pretty clear, isn't it, I think, what Nick Nurse is doing right now. I mean, what he put Chris Boucher in after a timeout. What was it, 12-2? It was 12-2. He called the timeout, put Boucher in, and that was it for Aaron Baines. I got as much playing time as Aaron Baines did the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, so far, I can't sugarcoat it. That's been a disastrous move. I mean, or pick an adjective that's worse. You know, a lot of the sell for the fan base was that, okay, we know you're disappointed that we lost Serge and we lost Marc Gasol, but we got the best available guy on the market after, you know, this initial group of free agents were gone. And he's had zero impact. I mean, I got to be honest with you, Jeff, I'm pretty stunned. Not that I thought Aaron Baines was going to come in and, you know, be Shaq or Dwight Howard in their prime. But, you know, he had been a serviceable guy for 20 minutes on some decent teams. And he's just nowhere right now. And, you know, the thing about Nick, I think you'd agree with me on this, Jeff. You know, if you get in Nick's doghouse, it takes a while to get out of it. Like, you got to fight your way to get playing time again.
Well, you got to play you got to play good defense to get out of
his doghouse. Exactly.
That's it. That's the only way out.
Stanley Johnson figured it out. That's the way out. And yes, he's been excellent. They have to get something out of that center position. I mean, even if Boucher becomes the de facto, you know, getting the de facto large minutes at the five, if that even is sort of, you know, in a positionless basketball world, they're still going to need 15, 20 minutes between Len and Baines against bigger teams. So, like, this has to turn. Like, it's a disaster if 40 games in, we're having the same conversation.
Yeah. No, it's certainly, and I think you're right. I don't think any of us, including, you know, folks like Leo Routens, who really liked Aaron Baines, but nobody was even suggesting that he was going to come in and replace Serge or even Marc Gasol. The idea was he could fit in with other players and would make, you know, the whole would be better than what you would have had if there were some other options there. But I think what we've seen happen is quite frankly, it's not even a negligible effect when he's on the floor. They're just not a better team. Like they're not as good when he is on the floor, and that's something you can't have. Like, you can have a guy, if you have a guy in the court and you're not as good with him as you otherwise are, that's one thing. But if you're depending on him to be a starter, and right from the get go you're not that good with him on the court, you can't coach around that. It's like having a starting pitcher that can't go two innings. You can't coach around that.
Maybe you weren't going to get last year, but last year the guy averaged 11.5 points, 5.5 boards. He was showing you that he could occasionally hit the three. I mean, you thought you were going to get some kind of production for him. The one caveat I'll say is this. I think Doug Smith talked about this with us too. You know, come February, Jeff, there will be more flexibility to make an addition. And if you look around the league, the most available position in the NBA come February, so we'll be at the center position. There's a lot of guys who have expiring contracts. Andre Drummond, probably most prominent among all. So it happens to be the one position where you can get some reinforcement. But, I mean, you know, this is why you signed Aaron Baines.
Yeah.
And so if you have to go out on the trade market, well, then, of course, it becomes, well, what asset are you giving up for whoever comes in? So I hope they fix that. I really do.
Matt Devlin is the Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. We will have the Raptors game tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan as they take on the Dallas Mavericks. We mentioned a bit of a tell, I think, for the Raptors this week. Dallas Mavericks tonight, a couple of games against the Miami Heat. Matt Devlin's next. This is Writer's Block.
Right, as we mentioned, the Raptors will take on the Dallas Mavericks tonight. We'll have a game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And it'll be the, this will be a week to take notes, I think, if you're a fan of the Toronto Raptors. You've got the Dallas Mavericks, and you got a couple of games against the Miami Heat as well. So, you know, everything aside, after those, after that win over the Hornets and you know, the team now looking at a 4-8 record and some semblance, I think, of what they can expect from their smaller lineup. All that aside, I think we'll know a little more about where the Raptors are right now after these three games. I'm not reading anything into it beyond that because, as I said, we've just looking at the results from last week in the NBA, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. And I just don't know. I don't know how many conclusions we can realistically draw yet. You know, with the exception perhaps of the really, really good teams in this league. I, for the life of me, I don't know how anybody could rank the teams like after the top four. I don't. There's too many odd things going on for that to be the case. Matt Devlin is our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. He joins us in writer's block. All right, Matt, before I get to the Raptors, I've got to ask you this because I saw it on Twitter. Your boy Ian off to Coquitlam. You know, that's, I was going to say, he'll know what life as an athlete is like right from the get-go, because... Please tell me you didn't tell him, Ian, it's a business, when the trade came through. Please tell me you didn't tell him that.
It's a business. No, it's you know what, it's a positive for him because, you know, it's a league that has a return to play potential. Mm-hmm. They're on the ice, you know, in that province. And as we know, you know, certainly for all of the players in Tier 2 that are aspiring to be NCAA hockey players, you know, it's been a difficult, as has been the case for so many different sports and lives impacted by this, that, you know, it was a positive for him to pick up and go out there, and they are on the ice in that province. And, you know, the league has a, you know, certainly a depth of protocols that go through with the potential of, you know, quite possibly returning to play. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's as we know, and this is wide ranging, right? It's been impactful at the NCAA level with the NCAA awarding an extra year of eligibility for players. You feel for all the OHL players right now, and hopefully that season, you know, does get underway. Certainly you think about all the overagers, not only in Major Junior and the OHL, but certainly Tier 2 as well. There's, you know, this has impacted people on multiple levels, as we all know.
Yes, I think that's fairly safe to say. But we wish Ian well. We wish him all the best.
Thank you.
It's
appreciate it.
Early to be leaving the nest, though, isn't it? It's, you know, I'm thinking back. Seems kind of early to be leaving the nest. I don't know. As a parent, I'd be,
I think it's all good, right? It's all good.
Yeah.
You know, you get to stay in Canada, and that's a positive, as the three of us know. And so it's all good. It's all good.
All right. Look, this is, we talked about this week coming up for the Raptors. I'm intrigued by this week. And again, I'm not going to have any conclusions, I don't think, after this week, because as Deitch and I talked about, Matt, we've seen some weird stuff in the NBA. I mean, this is a season unlike any other. I never thought I'd see the New York Knicks run the Boston Celtics off the floor this year. I mean, I don't care how many players are out there. So we're seeing a lot of weird stuff. We're seeing a lot of weird stuff. Having said that, though, Dallas, Miami, we'll have a better idea, I think, of where the Raptors are when this is done. Maybe not what to expect, but a better idea of where they are right now, won't we?
I don't disagree with you. I think that the first 20 games is certainly a measuring point. It'll provide you with, you know, the right timeline, you know, as we head to 20 games. And even after this week, we won't be there.
You still won't be there, right?
I was speaking to some friends, and I think it's, you know, while the games are coming fast and furious, it's condensed in days, but the schedule is a 72-game schedule, right? That's 10 games less. It's not as condensed or as shortened as the NHL, right? So that sense of you got to get it going, it's still a 72-game season. The 20 games, I do believe, will give us a really good barometer. But I do believe as well that we're already starting to see the signs, right? I think the signs of exactly where Nick is going. We understand who the players are that he'll lean on. And then we also understand that there's some players that have a lot more to give. And hopefully over the next 7-8 games, we start to see that.
Matt, I've just been informed that the Nets are actually giving an additional first-round pick for your son. So the 2029 draft pick. So there you go. One of the things Jeff and I were mentioning earlier is that, you know, this week, I feel like these next couple of games actually will tell you something. You know, it's one thing to play the Hornets, and they match up pretty well with the Hornets, and I don't know how good the Hornets are going to be by the end of the year. But the Mavericks have one of the best players in the league, and so you're always in the game with Doncic and obviously some scorers around him. And then the Heat are, you know, even if they got off to a slower start, legitimate team. Do you, I realize it's early, and I know we always have these conversations on this station, but, like, I feel like we're going to, you know, after the next 3 or 4 games, like, it may give you more indication of what these guys are than the last 3 or 4 games. Do you buy that?
Well, I would say this, that I think it started on a Sunday night, Richard, you know, with their performance against Golden State and then the carryover to Portland. Because when you lose 2 games like that, you know you can go in a different direction. So no matter your opponent in the NBA, Charlotte came in having won 4 in a row before losing to Dallas. And so they caught him the first go around on the second night of a back-to-back. And then they took care of business on Saturday night when they had Hayward, right? Now, to your point, you have Dallas. Luka Doncic is not happy about his performance yesterday. They're coming in after losing to the Chicago Bulls. So, you know, they'll have certainly a purpose and an agenda to take care of their own business. And then you have Miami, who, although they've scuffled a little bit, you know, you expect them to be there at the end. And I don't disagree that, you know, this week is going to give you more signs. But I think there's signs of what we know, right? We know about the backcourt of the Raptors. We know that OG Anunoby, who had a great game on Saturday night, is a player that continues to grow and evolve as a player. We know that same thing, even at a higher level, has happened with Pascal Siakam, and he has responded. And then you have Norman Powell. I think that that's a big piece in all this. We finally saw him Saturday night kind of produce a big-time performance, and you need that from him. I'm not saying you're going to need 6 made threes, but you're going to need some level of consistency that Nick knows who he's going to and what he's going to get. And then, you know, those are the 5 that he's talked about throughout. And then who else is there? And I think we're starting to see the emergence of Chris Boucher. He's, you know, in baseball terminology, he's a changeup, right? He gives you a different look. And that's worked out. He's performed. He's captured the opportunity. You love to see it. And then you're starting from a defensive standpoint to see the emergence of Stanley Johnson. And that's a positive for the Raptors, because I don't know that they thought that he was going to be a player that was going to get into the rotation. But based upon the fact that others didn't perform at a certain level, here's your opportunity, play defense, know the schemes, and provide some offense. So that, to me, is a positive. But I think you kind of know that now. It's, can you get all of that going in a game for 48 minutes? And can you get that not only for one game, but now can you get it for 2? Can you get it for 3? And then you have those 7, and then who are 8, 9, and 10, and how will they emerge through that time?
What's happened with Aaron Baines?
Oof. It's a great question.
Because I listen, when they brought him in, Bo, I was all on board with, you know, what you and Leo and everybody else around the team said. I thought it was a smart pickup. Yeah. I really did.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I agree. It's, you know, it just hasn't worked up to now, right? And is it the pace of play? Is it as simple as he's just not making shots and confidence, as we know, is, you know, very delicate? It's a great question. And you really don't get a sense of it other than for what you see. And what you see is, you know, he's struggling with his shot, right? Defensively hasn't really been the presence because those minutes just aren't necessarily there. And maybe also based upon their opponents, based upon the way the league is playing, the pace of play, as we saw this past Thursday, Saturday, it's just crazy, right? So is it something where you'll pick your spots with him moving forward based upon the flow of the game? Be interesting to see. Because I know they'd still like to keep Boucher coming off of the bench, but the last two games he has started the second half, right? So they keep – it's kind of like what they did in the NBA Finals with Danny Green and Fred VanVleet, right? Just with something just a little bit different. So it's interesting to watch him evolve.
Let me ask you about another guy who it's kind of hard to figure out exactly what the development is at the moment. Terrence Davis obviously has things that happened away from the court. I think there's another court date coming up. The Raptors ultimately have to own whatever decision they ultimately have with Terrence long term. But in terms of Matt, his play on the court, the one thing you could say about him last year where there were games where he was impactful, perhaps even at times the best player on the court at certain times, particularly from an offensive perspective. This year, he's had no impact. And I'm wondering, given that you're watching this you've seen every game tighter than me, do you have any thoughts? It feels like a guy who you thought developmentally, like this year would be a big step forward, it feels like he's taken a step back.
Yeah, no, he has, and he's been one of those players that I think you expected more from. But then you also have a draft pick in Malachi Flynn, who the last couple of games that they've gone to, right? And then, you know, listening to Nick talk about defense and defensive schemes, you know, there were a lot of situations last year where defensively, you know, a mistake would happen here or there. You don't get as exposed because of who you're on the floor with. And specifically, you know, that's Serge Ibaka more than likely for Terrence Davis, right? Who can clean some things up on the back end. And, you know, this year they don't necessarily have that luxury. So as you were asking that question, I was kind of thinking about, well, is it that, right, where, you know, a team that was the best defensive team in the NBA last year now, because of different parts that aren't there, you know, does that impact him, right? Because you can make mistakes, certainly, when you have a collective unit around you that can help you, right? And then it allows for your offense to flourish. And so I just think that there's been a level of inconsistency there defensively, and then obviously, you know, that ultimately affects his playing time, along with the fact that you've drafted Malachi Flynn, and you want to see exactly what you have with him. If that makes sense, right?
Yeah. No, it absolutely does. I want to broaden our focus a little bit here. We saw James Harden announce his arrival with the Brooklyn Nets. Can you explain that? Can you explain that to me, Matt? I mean, I saw the shot of him warming up, I thought, okay, wait a minute. He looks like he's lost about 40 pounds. And it ain't that easy. Trust me, it's not It's not that easy.
Trust me, I know.
Where's this going? And B, wherever it goes, how does Kyrie Irving fit into the destination?
Well, it's when you think about the three of them, I think when you think of a duo, certainly KD and Harden are extremely intriguing, right? It's a, or, you know, they've been together before. They went to the NBA Finals, and then Harden that summer in 2012 ended up down in Houston because they didn't want to exceed the luxury tax in Oklahoma City. There are some players in every sport, and all three of us have covered for a long time, and whether it's baseball, football, basketball, hockey, they can just play. They can play. And it doesn't matter anything else that's going on. Doesn't matter if all the reports about what James Harden is doing. At the end of the day, when the ball goes up, he plays and he produces. And so he's that talented. And ultimately, it's going to be a decision, I think, and be interested to hear what both of you. I think it's a decision based on what those three decide, right? It's going to be Durant more than likely at the end of the game when push comes to shove. In the postseason, not saying in the regular season. And then with Harden and Kyrie, you know, they probably, although Kyrie has a ring, they probably have a little bit more to prove than KD, right? But they all have something to prove. And so will they come together and will they make this decision that, you know what, we have enough, let's get it done. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Because I don't think anybody, including the three of them, know that answer today.
No, I think that's pretty safe, Matt. My sense is that Steve Nash is just kind of, well, look, he's seen a lot. I'm sure they'll make it work. Yeah. But you're right. I think ultimately it's going to come down to the Harden. It's ultimately going to come down to Harden and Durant. Like, that's going to be the axis around which everything revolves. And Kyrie's going to have to be, whether or not he does it, he's going to have to be the guy to kind of give a bit here, I think.
Yeah. The one thing, the big three, what's always proven in the big three is someone has to defer a lot. You know, Bosch deferred when it came to Miami. So which of those three guys is really willing to defer? The great thing about Durant is Durant can score sort of off anything. He doesn't necessarily have to be ball dominant. But James Harden and Kyrie Irving must have the ball in order for them to be great. And that, I feel like if they figure that out, they can be great. If they don't figure it out, you know, you're looking at like, the biggest soap opera this side of General Hospital.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I'd say this. If you remember Kyrie's, which I know both of you do, when he was with Cleveland, you know, in impactful situations in games, right? It was, you know, LeBron bringing the basketball up a lot of the times, and he played off the ball, and he was exceptional at that. But we also know that he wanted the ball more in his hands, and we know the story in Boston. And so back to what you just said, Richard, you know, somebody will have to defer. And to bring that closer to home to the Toronto Raptors, you think about that tremendous 2019 run, and whether you know, those that watched all of that realize it or not, there was a lot of players that deferred. You had Kyle Lowry, you know, that took less shots. You had Serge Ibaka that went to the bench in order to satisfy the team, Marc Gasol being, and it all worked out, right? Players were willing to take less shots for Kawhi. Players were willing to accept different roles because ultimately they wanted a ring. And the question will be, how bad do you want the ring? Do you want it enough where you're willing to take a look at those numbers and say, okay, I'm going to be a Hall of Famer statistically, James Harden, but it'd be nice to have that ring, and I'm willing to accept maybe something a little bit different. But I think it's going to be Kyrie ultimately in that that's going to have to accept it.
Matt, good stuff as always, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this.
You got it. All the best.
Take care. That is Matt Devlin, our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. Again, big week for the Raps. Well, big week in terms of
Judgment Week.
I don't know about that. They'll play the Dallas Mavericks tonight and then a couple of games against the Miami Heat. Who was I said? I think regardless of what the standings are, regardless of where they are in their development. The Miami Heat, to me, there are three teams in this, I think, in the East right now that are kind of measuring sticks. Milwaukee, New Jersey, although I think they're off the board right now, and Miami. And I think if you're the Raptors, you know, you're facing a Miami team that likes to, that is kind of a cultural team as well. And by that, I mean a team that likes to work hard, a team that puts a nose to the grindstone, all that good stuff. I think it's a real good, I think it's a real good test of where you are for the Toronto Raptors to see them. And they're going to play two times in 3 days. It'll be a quick turnaround. They're going to play an opponent that's good. They're going to play an opponent that, you know, has scouted them and has just seen them. This is a great chance for the Raptors to really establish something. I'll tell you, if they can go 2-1 out of these three games, then I think maybe, you know, I'm not going to sit here again and rush to judgment after, what, that'll be three games, 15 games. I need to see a little more. But if they can go 2-1 out of these three games, then I think you can say, all right, you know, we're starting to see signs of what this team is going to look like down the road. The Leafs take on the Winnipeg Jets tonight. We'll have the game on Sportsnet. Ken Wiebe covers the Jets for Sportsnet.ca. No Patrick Laine. Short term, long term, we'll find out next. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Patrick Laine will not be in the lineup tonight as the Winnipeg Jets take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Jets have had a relatively relaxed start to the season. That's probably overstating it, but they opened the season with a 4-3 win over the Flames on Thursday. And they've actually, unlike a lot of teams, they've had a bunch of days off since then, and an opportunity given the shortened training camp to work on some things, an opportunity that other teams probably wouldn't mind having as well. Ken Wiebe is a Jets beat reporter with Sportsnet.ca. You can follow him at Wiebe's World. He joins us in Writer's Block. Ken, thanks so much for doing this. Trust you're doing well. Give us the latest on Patrick Laine, first of all. And it is an upper body injury, and they are saying it's day-to-day. What are you hearing about this?
Yeah, Jeff, definitely a strange development. I was one of the few people at practice yesterday. Patrick Laine was out skating around, participating as normal, and suddenly went down the tunnel, and I thought he was just going to change his stick, but it was an exit stage right, and he didn't return. So there were a couple of photos of him grabbing his hips. So, I mean, hip flexor would be my best guess, but, that would fall in that mid-body range. But Paul Maurice made it, you know, kind of abundantly clear that he didn't see it as anything serious unless something changes. But the problem with that is that after their kind of relaxed schedule that you alluded to, Jets starting six games in 9 days with tonight's game against the Leafs. So if you're having any issues, whether it's hip or groin or, you know, whatever the issue is, it's something that you have trouble getting warmed up in. Playing back-to-backs and playing in a compressed schedule is probably not going to hasten the process of him being back up to full speed. But, I mean, boy, oh boy, given how Laine played in the opener, they'd sure like to see that version of the player back in the lineup sooner than later, that's for sure.
Ken, where do things stand with Laine in terms of his thought process as to how he feels at the moment about the organization, what the organization feels about him? Where does that, independent of his play on the ice, where does that stand right now?
Yeah, Richard, I mean, I think both sides have come to the, you know, conclusion that the best thing for both parties is that Patrick Laine, you know, given the quarantine rules and everything else, is most likely going to be with the Jets through the season. So best outcome for all parties is for him to play like he did on Thursday, where he was a dominant force with the two goals, the assist, and more importantly, the effort level you saw. You know, yes, sure, he came to the aid of his teammate, Cal Connor. That was important, but he showed that investment level all over the ice. So for me, I think that that's a separate issue, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. I mean, of course, one phone call could change that, and if two GMs come together, that could change. But I just don't see Laine going anywhere until the offseason at the earliest. So for me, this is just a matter of him, Jets being cautious and wanting him to be at close to full speed before they risk him being on the shelf for an extended period of time, because we know that would be detrimental to their roster, obviously.
Watching their first game of the year against Calgary, I mean, there was a lot of, as we expected, it was a really physical game. There was a lot of pushback from the Jets. I'm just wondering, it's just one game, obviously, Ken, but when you saw the way they won that game, and again, the pushback they got, they managed to get physically against the Flames. What do you think Paul Maurice took away from that game? Even though it's only one game, I get that, but I thought they really rose to the physical challenge. It took them a while to get going, but when they did, I thought they actually took the initiative physically at various points in the game.
Yeah, very true, Jeff. And I mean, that was important for them, especially the way they got kind of pushed around by the Flames in the qualifying round series. We know the Jets have changed the composition of their roster. I mean, they're not going to go back to 2015 where they were a bang and crash team. This is a skill team, first and foremost. They'll rely on their top six, but they do have some players with a physical element to their game. And I do think it's going to be important, as we talked about so often, there's so much high-end skill in this division that if you can impose your will physically on a number of occasions, that can certainly help you over the long run. But as we've also found, that's a taxing way to play, and it can lead to injuries not only for the opposition but for their own team. So I'll be curious to see how it goes. I mean, the Jets are a fast team and going to rely on their skill, but I do think that they're guys like Adam Lowry are going to set the physical tone as we move along here. But tonight for me is Mark Scheifele will be under the spotlight, especially with Lonnie out here.
If you had to take a look at the North Division overall from your perspective, where do you see the Jets in terms of their talent composition, their roster composition? Where do you think they slot in amid the rest of the teams in Canada?
Yeah, Richard, for me, I mean, the Jets are kind of middle of the pack. I mean, I think they have the high-end talent and goaltending that they could challenge for the division. But, obviously there's some question marks on defense, especially now with Lindell and DeMello. We'll miss this entire road trip back home here in Winnipeg with his wife and newborn. Tucker Poolman, who started the year on the top pairing with Josh Morrissey, is out. So that means Sammy Niku is, gone from being in the top eight, as Paul Maurice said, to being on the top pairing. And Kitchener product to Logan Stanley, the 2016 first rounder, will make his NHL debut tonight. In terms of where they stand, I think they're kind of middle of the pack. I do think they have the ability to be a playoff team, but I think almost every team in the Canadian division would say that now. But I do think that they're high-end forwards, especially given what we've seen from Mark Scheifele, both in training camp, coming back off that ankle injury that he sustained three shifts into the qualifying round series. He looks... he's always been a determined individual, but his love and passion for the game is back. Took some playful jabs in shots in the media here this morning. About reporters talking about Austin Matthews' weight loss and what it means for his speed. But, I mean, here's a guy that I was very close to Dale Hawerchuk. I spoke openly and heartfelt message again today about how he feels Dale's watching over him. And it's such an important year for Scheife. He wants to be in that discussion among the elite players in this division. And I think, first time under the microscope in Toronto, he loves being in his home province. And I expect him to be a dominant force here again tonight.
You know, Ken, getting back to Patrick Laine for a bit, and presuming this is a day-to-day thing, and presuming he comes back from it and everything is okay. I watch him play, and I understand that it's not necessarily... there's not a direct parallel between him and Austin Matthews. But one of the things we kept hearing about Austin Matthews is once he kind of understood how big he was, right, and how good he could be at shielding the puck. I mean, he could throw his weight around without having to drop the gloves or, hammer guys into the boards. He can just use his size to dominate a game. And I kind of get the impression we might be seeing that a little bit with Laine too. Like the understanding that, wow, I'm pretty strong in my skates. I'm a hard guy to knock down. And if I can just apply myself a little bit defensively, I keep running out guys like Anze Kopitar. To me, or even Patrice Bergeron, understanding these guys are more talented offensively than Patrice Bergeron. But my point is, you can become a good two-way player without necessarily giving up your offensive, you know, the fun part of it. And I kind of get the impression Liney could be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that Palmer said it today, Jeff, morphing into a bona fide power forward. And again, that's not to say that he's a power forward in the way that, you know, guys were in the 80s and the 90s.
Sure.
This is a guy who can use his body to create space. He can shield himself for the puck the way that Jaromir Jagr used to do. But he can also get in on the forecheck like Alex Ovechkin and make life miserable for the opposing defenseman. So, I mean, the thing you and I talked about after the game winner, I mean, there haven't been a lot of times. We've seen a lot of things from Patrick Laine, but we haven't seen him win a foot race basically from the bottom of the hash marks down the end of the ice in a race with Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau,
right,
to get the ability to get that shot off. As you mentioned, the deception to look off Gaudreau to create the odd man rush. But the fact that he was able to stay with it, Monahan catches him. He does everything right on the back pressure, lifts his stick, but Laine is so strong that he still has a chance to get the puck and get the shot away. I mean, to me, that was the thing that stood out so much. I mean, a year ago, maybe he gets caught, you know, at the top of the circle and he has to take a shot. I mean, for me, his burst and acceleration that he was able to sustain it over that stretch and period of the ice was just another one of those examples of how much work he's put in on the conditioning side. And as you mentioned, similar to Austin, when you realize how strong you are and how powerful you can be, I think you can really take your game to a, you know, not just an elite level, but like, you know, an otherworldly level that, you know, some players just can't compete with that kind of strength and skill set combination.
Can, what's realistic, you think, for Connor Hellebrook this year? What kind of year can he have?
Yeah, I mean, we know that based on the skill level we talked about in the division, is it going to be difficult to repeat as a Vezina winner? Of course. I mean, almost every team has flaws on the back end to a certain degree in terms of their depth. So I think the high volume chances are still going to be there for Hellebuck to face. I don't think it'll be at a ridiculous level as it was last year. I do think that as long as Lauren Brossoit plays well and can provide, whether that number is 12 or 14 starts, to keep Hellebuck fresh, I think he can play at an elite level. I mean, I do think he can repeat as a Vezina Trophy winner, but that also means that he has to be sharp at all times. I mean, I think we all saw it in the first game. I think it took him a little bit of time to get comfortable in the crease. The first period was a little bit of an adventure for him, but he settled down after that. So I would expect Hellebuck to continue to play at that high level. And because the Jets will be working to, you know, limit the grade A chances against, I think that will certainly help his cause. But, I mean, tonight, obviously, with, you know, Nathan Beaulieu having to move to his offside and Logan Stanley making his debut, I think the Jets are going to try to protect that third pairing's minutes. They certainly won't want them out against Tavares or Matthews very often. But with the Leafs going 7D, you know there's always going to be a skilled player rotating through, double-shifting on that fourth line. So it'll be an interesting storyline to watch tonight for sure.
Ken, thanks for doing this, man. Always good to talk to you. Stay safe. Be well.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Ken Wiebe is our Jets beat reporter with Sportsnet.ca. You can follow him on Twitter at Wiebes World. That's W-I-E-B-E-S World. Again, the Jets, they started their season with a 4-3 overtime win over the Flames. They are Canada's team. We all know that. They are Canada's team. A 4-3 win over the Flames on Thursday. They've had a couple of days off. They will start a run of 6 games in 9 nights tonight on Sportsnet against the Leafs. No Patrick Laine in the lineup for the Winnipeg Jets day-to-day with what may be, they're calling it an upper body injury, but you heard Ken Wiebe report that it was pretty, or there were reports at least that in practice yesterday in Winnipeg, he at one point was favoring his hip. So that would be, I was going to say that's a loss for the Jets at any point in the year. But when you're facing a run of games, when the games come this quickly and points look very much as if they're going to be at a premium out of the gate, it is it's going to be a tough road for the Jets, to a tough road of hope. But again, it'll start it tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop on Sportsnet. We have a fun 4 o'clock hour. Elliot Friedman, Amy Trask, we'll get you set for it. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, so our friend John Paul Morosi of the MLB Network reported earlier today that industry sources are telling him that George Springer is expected to announce his decision this week, expected to decide, it seems, between the New York Mets and the Toronto Blue Jays. Again, keep in mind that one reporter reporting this, but considering sources and considering the fact that we have already seen a couple of significant players meet either by trade or free agency, it would stand to reason that that George Springer would be in the first to make a decision. And I will say this. I would think if you are George Springer and you're waiting to sort of smoke out another team, that probably would have already happened. So it's been reported, Richard, for 3 weeks now that the Mets and the Jays are the front runners. I believe Ben Nicholson-Smith has reported that his sources are telling him the Jays are willing to go to $125 million to get George Springer in. I don't pretend to know how many years that's over, but I mean, I'm sure I'll be able to figure that out quickly enough. But it does appear as if we may be getting some sort of resolution to this whole George Springer situation this week, and then either the Jays will have either answered a lot of their off-season problems, or we're going to have to see what they pivot to.
Yeah, Morosi actually reported that Alex Colomé is potentially interested in the Blue Jays or the Astros. So that's another one too. It's another one to follow. You know, I think, Jeff, let's be honest. I mean, if the Blue Jays are willing to go to a certain number, they'll beat out the Mets here. And, you know, I think regardless of where Springer's true desires are at, the one sort of caveat or X factor here, and, you know, obviously there's been a lot written about this. I know Ken Rosenthal wrote about this at The Athletic, is, you know, does the Lindor signing have any impact on Springer and the Mets thinking about putting that kind of dollar figure invested in Springer? But man, if you're trying to target a fit that just is a great fit for Toronto, that's the guy. I mean, plus outfielder, you already have a surplus in the infield. I mean, he really gives you what you need. I wish I knew the particulars in terms of the money and, you know, and where the Springer camp is sort of putting their ask on and where the Blue Jays would go up to.
I mean, here's the thing that concerns me about the whole Mets and the luxury tax thing, is it's pretty clear that George Springer's preference would be to play with the Mets. I mean,
I think that's true.
Everybody seems to suggest that. He's from Connecticut. He's a local kid. His preference would be to play with the Mets. And I gotta think that if it's his preference to play with the Mets, then he will do the same thing DJ LeMahieu did with the Yankees, the same thing we saw Liam Hendricks do with the White Sox, which is essentially try to structure even 1 year of a 5 or 6 year contract in such a way that it allows some sort of salary cap relief, some sort of luxury tax relief. I think we're seeing now that teams are viewing the luxury tax less as a definite, less as a line in the sand, as a guideline, right? And plan it so that your core players, and the thing that needs to be remembered about the Mets is, you know, they're at some point they're going to have to address Michael Conforto, who's a really good player. He's going to get a lot of money as well. So it's kind of a guidepost as to when you are going to need to pay, when you're going to have to maximize salary for each player. So I really do believe this. George Springer wants to be with the Mets. he will go to the Mets regardless of the dollar figure. They'll make it work. And if I'm the Jays, again, I keep getting back to this. I'm in a position where I'm going to have to blow somebody out of the water to sign here. And I don't know if $115 or $125 million blows the Mets offer out of the water. I really don't. And, you know, and it may come down to what we consider being blowing somebody else's offer out of the water may not be, you know, may not be worth it to George Springer if he gets where he wants to go. So my hope is at this point that the Blue Jays have enough of a read in this situation that if it isn't going to happen, they can pivot. There's still a lot of good free agents out there. I know Blue Jays fans are tired of hearing it, but the fact of the matter is there's still a lot of good free agents out there. And I found it interesting that this weekend there was a lot of talk in the industry, and I don't know how serious this was, but there was a lot of talk in the industry about the Reds and the Yankees doing something involving Luis Castillo. And you know, the focus of that deal was essentially supposed to be Gleyber Torres. There's no way in living hell that the Yankees are going to give up Gleyber Torres for Luis Castillo. And when I heard that, you know, I'm thinking to myself, because Luis Castillo is a guy, if I were the Blues, I'd rather have Luis Castillo than Trevor Bauer. I'd rather have Luis Castillo in a heartbeat. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait, if that's really what the Reds are asking, you know, the Blue Jays equivalent is Bo Bichette. So if that's what the ask is for a good young starting pitcher, wow. You know, count me out. Count me out of that market, man.
Yeah, you know, if Springer ends up going to the Mets, I'll be really curious to see how the Blue Jays approach Trevor Bauer, and if it changes their thinking or not. Obviously, I don't think there's any doubt that they would have interest in Trevor Bauer, you know, as just sort of philosophically. The guy obviously fits exactly what they need.
Well, they got money to spend, too. They got money to spend now. That's
exactly.
Regardless of how much it is, they got money to spend now, and that may not be the case. You know, I keep telling people, at some point, Bo's going to have to get paid. At some point, Cavan's going to have to get paid. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the Blue Jays will still be a good team if they make no moves. They're going to bring somebody in. And you're right. I know it's you know, it makes for good talk radio, and it's hard to see guys go. But the reality is, there's a ton of good guys left. I mean, LeMahieu's off the board. Lindor got traded. McCann is off the board. Hendricks is off the board. Charlie Morton's off the board. And then the rest of the people are still on the board. And maybe I'm missing one or two other names. And probably Realmuto goes back to the Phillies. So, you know, they have money. They are going to bring somebody in. I do think, though, Springer is just such a great fit because it's adding a massive need and giving up no asset, Jeff, except money. Which I know is an asset, but it's not players, it's not futures, and so the fit would be really good. But yeah, I mean, if you hand on a religious book right now, if you ask me, I think Springer wants to be a Met. I think everything points to it. He's from that area. He's, you know, I think he likes the idea of going to that kind of big city. So we will see. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the Mets play it.
Yeah, and John Heyman reporting that both the Mets and the Jays have offered nine-figure contracts to LeMahieu. So we're talking over $100,000. And this also kind of factors into my thinking here. If you're the Mets and you're prepared to go to if you're the Mets and prepared to go to $100 million, my guess is you're prepared to go to $115 million. And if you're prepared to go to $115 million, that means the Jays are going to have to go even more than that. So, you know, my sense is for the Jays to get Springer, it's probably going to cost them someplace closer to $135, $140 million to get this thing done. And, you know, I would do it. I would do it because, and I'm going to say this in the air quotes, it's just money. But I wonder if at some point, too, though, the Blue Jays sit back and go, look, are we really in the picture here, or are we just being used as kind of a stalking horse? The other factor that I found really interesting, the reporting this weekend as well, is the fact there has been some suggestion out there that the Jays might try to double up and get Springer and Michael Brantley from the same
same agency. Yeah, that was interesting.
And that, and I will tell you this. I mean, that does happen. It's essentially, we'll sign your guy for X, and we'll do another one of your guys a solid by signing him for Y. And
the Brantley Jays get Rowdy Tellez's at-bats? Is that how that could theoretically work?
I have no idea how it theoretically works. I mean, I really, if I can get Michael Brantley, I don't care about Rowdy Tellez. I'll you know, again, the way this thing shakes out, Michael Brantley will be one of your starting outfielders. I would imagine that, you know, that may free up you to move one of your other outfielders by. Michael Brantley's one of your outfielders. Vladdy's probably at third, you know, player, Tellez is at first. Like, I'll make that work. That's not an issue, but you know, it is something the Jays did with Kendrys Morales. I mean, when they signed Lourdes Gurriel Jr., they also signed Kendrys Morales, who's represented by the same agent. And yeah, part of it was to have somebody in the organization that, you know, that Lourdes could feel comfortable with. But let's be very clear. It was also the Jays doing his agency a solid, you know, bringing in Kendrys Morales as well as this guy. So that does happen, you know, especially in a market like this where there isn't a lot of movement. You may see the Jays kind of use that as a, you know, as a not as a lure, because it's not going to make any difference to George Springer, but it might be a way of sort of keeping an opening there for the agency. So hopefully we know this week, because as I said, I think the Jays, if you operate under the assumption we're looking at 162 games, time's a wasting. You know, we're less than a month away, maybe a month and a bit away from spring training. And, you know, if you're not going to sign George Springer, you have to pivot really quickly. And you know, and I don't, everything we're hearing about JT Realmuto seems to be that he's going to stay with the Phillies. Again, I got to think that JT Realmuto by now has his offers in hand and probably close to making a decision. But there we are. The Leafs will play the Winnipeg Jets tonight. No Patrick Laine in the lineup for the Jets. A lot of player movement, odd player movement around the Leafs. And we'll talk to Elliot Friedman about that. And about Jason Spezza, like, I have no problem with Jason Spezza doing what he's doing, man. I just don't know how fair it is. We'll see what Fried says next. It's Writer's Block.
This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt, and Richard Deitch on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
That we're giving you the chance to virtually meet Joe Thornton. Starting tomorrow, you can tune in throughout the day every weekday for the keywords and then text them to 590-590 to enter. For more details on how to meet Joe Thornton, visit sportsnet.ca/590. The Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets will play tonight on Sportsnet. Puck drop is at 7 o'clock as the Jets begin the first of six games in 9 days. A bit of a run without Patrick Laine. Of course, the Leafs coming off their win over the Ottawa Senators. Freddie Anderson gets the start and goal for the Leafs. There had been some thought, I think, or some talk that the Leafs might consider going with Jack Campbell. But as we said, they will be going instead with Freddie Anderson tonight. Other Leafs news. Mikko Lehtonen is scheduled to start tonight. The Leafs will go with seven defensemen. Nick Robertson's out for 4 weeks with a knee injury. Aaron Dell was claimed on waivers. And Jason Spezza cleared waivers. Do we have Elliot? All right. We are awaiting Elliot Friedman to join us, and we'll get Elliot's take on these moves. And Richard, we'll talk about the whole Spezza, thing here. So I said, I understand that, you know, most teams around the NHL are probably operating under the assumption, I don't even, they may not need Jason Spezza. anyhow, but man, I don't know. I get what his age is doing, and I'm not criticizing Jason Spezza for not wanting to go anywhere. He's clearly here in Toronto because he wants to finish his year here, but man, I don't know if that's necessarily the way waivers are supposed to work.
Yeah, but I'm a big supporter, honestly, of players doing anything they can to work around systems, whether that's trying to get themselves drafted by a certain team or in Spezza's situation. I think it's actually pretty creative. And the reason I say that is because from the very beginning of your career, Jeff, you really give up so much control. You never control who you're drafted to outside of some very few players who have leverage to make that happen. And so I thought it was actually, I give them credit. I know it's against the spirit of the rules, but it's a creative way, I think, to keep Spezza where he wants to be. And in some sense, and maybe there are fans out there who disagree, I feel like you can argue the fact that he sort of earned it. I mean, whatever he is, 36, 37, he's been a quality guy in the league. He's put in his time. He's made it clear this is the only franchise he wants to play in, or he's gonna walk. And so he's letting teams know that if you decide to make this waiver claim, I'm not coming. So I like what he did, but yeah, it's absolutely against the spirit of the rules. And if you're the league, you're certainly not happy.
Well, let's bring in Elliot Friedman of 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. I'll just ask you, Elliot. Look, I want to make. You know, I understand why he's doing it, and I'd probably do the same damn thing if I was him. But, you know, there's really nothing to prevent anybody else from doing this, is there? Look, I understand a kid is 24 years old is probably not going to say, look, I don't want to be claimed because I'm going to retire. But we're going to see a lot of guys move this year, or we're going to see a lot of things done, I think, because of the salary cap and COVID. And I don't know. This wouldn't sit right with me if I was another GM.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I got to say, Jeff, is I don't think what happened with Spezza and Rick Kerr and through Chris, I don't think that comes as a surprise to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody knew that Jason Spezza, like, before he came to the Leafs last season, Ottawa talked about having him back, and, you know, he made it pretty clear it was Toronto or nothing. And so I think everybody kind of knows that that's what he prefers. Like, I think even if Chris hadn't done his job and called the agents, like, I think nobody might have claimed him anyway for the same reason.
Right.
That they knew that for Jason Spezza it was Toronto or nothing. So it's a good story, and it was good work by CJ. I think most people in the business, in terms of work in hockey, they probably didn't bat an eye because they said, well, of course, that's what we expected.
Elliot, I want to ask you a non-ice question here. Jeff and I talked about this at the top of the show. And that's the Maple Leafs goaltending situation. Freddie Anderson, I believe, starting tonight against the Jets. But, you know, I think this year there is a really good argument's not the right word, but I think this, if any year you sort of can go against convention and not necessarily be worried about the quote-unquote number one being upset if the 1A or a very good 2 ends up playing consecutive games. Like, to me, this is the year, and I was a little surprised that Jack Campbell didn't get the start tonight, and I wonder how you see it.
Well, I was surprised, too. I think it's interesting, you know, whether they intended to or not, they emphatically pointed out today that, you know, actions speak louder than words, right, Richard? And they emphatically pointed out today that Frederick Anderson is their number one guy. Like, you know, I think teams talk all the time about, yeah, you need to have two goalies. But there's the old line, if you have two goalies, you don't have one real key starter. And I think you always want to know that in a game that you have to have, this is the guy that we're going with. And I think it would have been very easy to go with Jack Campbell tonight. I probably would have, Richard, in a week where you're going to be playing 4 times in 6 days. I thought it was a perfect opportunity to go to him. But I also recognize that in a city like Toronto, where we tend to overreact to everything, if Campbell had started, it would be like, goaltender controversy. How are we going to handle this? And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is Anderson tends to be a bit of a slow starter, and I wonder if that factored into it to the point where they said, we cannot have this guy rusty. We have to get him going. And so I think all of that factors in, but there's no question to me, Richard, if Campbell would have started tonight, we would have had a good old-fashioned Toronto media hot take night tonight.
All right, speaking of hot, well, and speaking of good old-fashioned Toronto hot takes, it was interesting how quickly people were wondering about Joe Thornton and his spot in that first line. Now, look, I understand. I mean, there are a lot when Sheldon Keefe announced this, a lot of people were going, oh, really? So I get that, but you know, I think. We talked about this at the start of the show. Like, I've watched a lot of NBA basketball. There's a lot of stuff right now. This is almost like a league of outliers right now, Elliot, in the NBA. There's a lot of weird stuff happening that won't happen later in the year and probably wouldn't have happened in a normal season. So I really do think you gotta, it's almost like the baseball approach. 20 games to see what the hell you have, 20 games to adjust or however many games, and then you let it run for the rest of the year. I think you almost have to do that.
You know, I think the other thing too, Jeff, and I was looking at this the other day because a coach mentioned it to me, and you really notice it when you look at the schedule. These teams are not going to be practicing much this year.
No.
And so I think it's well said. Like, I like that, 20 games to find out what the hell you've got and 20 games to fix it, because you're not going to be fixing it in practice this year.
Right.
So people have to understand their roles. People have to accept roles. Like, you know, the first couple of nights for the Leafs, it's pretty obvious that, you know, Hyman is going to be spelling Thornton here and there. And that's kind of, I think, what everybody was expecting. The thing with Toronto that's fascinating tonight is they're going 11-7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Robertson's injury, he's only an $822,000 player. It doesn't give them a lot of flexibility in terms of what they can do. Now, Dell's gone and Spezza helped them by clearing waivers, so it did increase it a bit more. But I'm really curious about this 11-7 tonight, because if you think the forward line looked a little bit odd before, I'm curious to see what they're going to look like tonight. I think there's a lot of forwards in D who hate that kind of lineup because it unbalances everything. We'll see what Sheldon Keefe's magic blender comes up with.
Elliot, Montreal is off to an excellent start. League's best power play. The early returns on Josh Anderson are very, very good. But from your perspective, what have you thought of the Canadiens so far? They've looked, I mean, it's early, two games, but they've looked pretty good.
They do look really good. You know, the thing I like about them is, like, Richard, I think that Toronto and Montreal are the two deepest teams in Canada. Like, they're the teams where you have guys who can play who aren't playing. Like, Montreal, there's a guy like Corey Perry, you know, not playing. You know, in Toronto, there are guys who could play on NHL teams who aren't playing. And so I like that about both the Canadiens and the Maple Leafs. But I just think the Canadiens look really fast, and they look really aggressive. And Suzuki, in particular, doesn't look like a postseason flash in the pan, like a pan. There's a lot of there. So I like them a lot. You know, I think they're going to be a problem for everybody else. And you know, the other night they had a couple of breakdowns, and Price was great, but I thought they really controlled that game against Edmonton. I think the Canadiens are pretty good.
What do you think the Oilers are right now?
Boy, I was really fascinated today to see that Ethan Bear's getting scratched tonight. You know, he was one of their real big success stories last year. That's a quick hook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jeff, like that's a quick hook. Like, that says to me, the Oilers want to send shockwaves through their group. You know, the goaltending, they've been a victim of this waiver merry-go-round here. They're stuck. And this is going to happen to more teams. You know, they're really going to have to depend on Koskinen. You know, it's you know, McDavid looks dynamite. Draisaitl's look dynamite. But right now they're not very deep. Those guys need help. And I'll tell you this, like, that's a team, you got to pay attention to detail. And when they don't pay attention to detail, Jeff, they give up really ugly goals. And I think that's the thing that they're probably looking at now as much as anything else is, you know, guys, when our goaltending's in the shape where it is, we got to be disciplined. And when they're not disciplined, it ends up in their net.
Elliot, Blair has said many times in the show that he likes the Senators. He thinks they're going to maybe exceed some people's expectations. From the pair of games we saw against Toronto, what did you think of their sort of their early start so far?
Well, you know, the one thing that someone pointed out to me the other night when they beat the Leafs in that first game, when they got ahead, Toronto constantly had to go through five guys to do anything. And you said, when you're a young team that, and they did add a lot of veterans, but when you're a young team that, you know, is coming off the season they had, you know, and you don't practice or you don't get a chance to play exhibition games and you're kind of roster thrown together, you don't expect them to be disciplined. And they were. And that I think, is a very good omen. Like, you know, they got some really talented young players like Shabbat, Kachuk, Stutzla. You know, Richard, if those three guys are the core of your team for a few years to come, you could really do some damage. You know, they've got a lot of guys who know how to play. Like, obviously, the big thing is Murray. I thought Murray was really good in the first two games. He's a big question mark. If he keeps that up and he keeps going in that direction, you know, they're going to really be a handful. But all of a sudden, I see the makings of a young core that they've got three guys who, if you're putting those three guys up against a lot of other teams, three guys, you're feeling pretty good about what you are.
Austin Watson is probably going to be the most hated hockey player in Canada by the time this year's done, isn't he?
Well, I just think that the one thing that I got to tell you, there could be a long competition for that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. The Kachucks are in there, too.
The Kachucks are in there. Antoine Roussel is in there. Mm-hmm. All these teams have some guys who, you know, really other people, fans hate. You know, the thing that I really liked at the end of that game, the win, is that, you know, Ottawa, I think when you're young and you're not, and you're kind of picking yourself up off the mat like Ottawa was last year, you don't have like a lot of edge or swagger to it. You don't piss other people off. You know, Simmons was trying to get the Leafs going at the end of that game, and Watson was just giving it to them. And I think Ottawa really liked that. Like, they just had someone on their bench who would just bark back at the other team. And I thought he was pointing scoreboard at the Leafs, but Kevin Bieksa, and I think Kevin's right, said, you know what, there's 23 seconds left. Like, why fight now? If you want to, we'll do this tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I do think the Ottawa guys felt that it was nice that we had a guy mouthing off at the other team and not just meekly taking it.
Elliot, the news in the last day or so has broken about the World Championships in Belarus and the pressure from sponsors and everywhere else, basically saying that the international folks need to get out of there.
Yeah, that one had been brewing for a little bit. But once the sponsor, Skoda, which is a huge sponsor of the World Championships, once they pulled it last week, they had no choice. So, you know, that was basically where it was. And, you know, Richard, like, you know, I know you're a guy who's a big political reader as much as anybody I follow on Twitter. Like, you know, we're heading into, I mean, the power of the consumer is greater than ever. Social media has given more power to the consumer than ever before. And, you know, this isn't the last time we're going to see something like this. So everybody better get used to it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm sorry, Blair, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to say, heading forward, it'll be really interesting to see if the league is ever in a situation, and I think they're smart, they probably won't, but if the league's ever in a situation, Elliot, where they take a sponsorship that the public is not particularly happy with, and then the public sort of informs them that they're not pleased with that.
Well, I think that happens everywhere now. I mean, after the craziness of last week, I mean, you know, we've seen huge changes, not necessarily with advertising, but social media. Companies are making it very clear that they hear it, more than ever. I mean, it's a really interesting time, Richard, because, you know, because of the pandemic, I think, like, you look at what the NHL is doing, it's doing things it's never done before. It's, you know, pushed into helmet ads, more ads than ever, either on or alongside the ice. You watched last week, Ottawa and Montreal announcing the Manscaped ads. Like, I have no problem with that. Like, I don't see what the big deal is. But, you know, somebody made the point to me that, you know, before, would teams have done that? Would Manscaped be a partner that a team would go with? And like I said, I personally don't care. But, you know, I bet you some people looked at it with, like, a bit of a surprised eyebrow. The world's a very different place, both in terms of what people and businesses and leagues are going to say, okay, maybe we wouldn't have done that before, but we're going to do that now. And also the blowback if you do something that the general public or whatever group is on social media doesn't like. Like, we are definitely headed into uncharted territory.
Elliot, good stuff as always, my friend. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Jeff. Take care, man. Richard, speak to you later, bud.
See ya.
That is Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada. He's Hockey Night in Canada's insider and 31 Thoughts co-host. And again, to get you set for tonight, it'll be the Jets and the Maple Leafs. It'll be on Sportsnet Ontario, Hockey Central, Maple Leafs pregame, 6:30 p.m. Amber Friedman and Stewart. Puck drop will be just after 7 on Sportsnet Ontario. It'll be Cuthbert, Simpson, and McKenzie call the game. And Leafs Nation postgame with Al Berga and Stellick right after the Mavericks and Raptors, which you can catch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The conference finals are set in the NFL. Amy Trask, CBS Sports NFL analyst, she'll break it down for us. This is Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Brady against Aaron Rodgers in the NFC Championship, and Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills against the Kansas City Chiefs, and we think Patrick Mahomes, although he is in concussion protocol, Andy Reid predictably, today essentially saying, I really can't really say anything because he's in concussion protocol. I'll have to go through that that particular process. But I would think it's safe to say that people will be surprised if Patrick Mahomes does not start that game for Kansas City. Again, there is a protocol that must be followed, but let's just say that if this was the 14th game of the regular season, I would feel a little differently. This doesn't mean it's right, but I'd feel a little differently about his chances of not playing compared to a playoff game. Amy Trask is CBS Sports NFL analyst. She's one of our favorites, and she joins us today on Writer's Block. Amy, as always, it is great to hear you. Thank you for doing this. Before we talk about, I know Deitch has got questions upon questions upon questions about the Bills and Kansas City, because needless to say, folks in these parts are a little worked up about that game. But I wanted to ask you about the Packers and Bucks. And look, both of these guys are Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Tom Brady, of course, a serial winner. What's at stake here for Aaron Rodgers? And I know you're not necessarily a big fan of making broad brush statements, but You think Aaron Rodgers is going to feel, or do you think that football people are going to feel that this is a bigger game for him than Tom Brady?
Well, thanks for having me. I always enjoy joining you. And I got to say, I'm a little proud that you said I'm one of your favorites, because you guys are my favorites, one of my favorites, too. As to the Green Bay question you just posed, you know, I don't know that any of us can answer for either of them if they believe it's more important than from the other. And if you're asking, do outsiders look at that? You know, I'm certainly not looking to equivocate or avoid your answer. It's my honest-to-goodness answer. I think it depends who you ask. I think people will bring different perspectives to this, and it will depend who you ask. As you noted, these are both tremendous, tremendous quarterbacks who've had phenomenal careers. Does it mean more? Does it reflect more on one than the other? I don't think that's the case necessarily.
Amy, thanks for joining us today. The Bills-Chiefs game, as Blair said, it's, you know, you can only imagine what Western New York is feeling right now. We have many, many fans of that team in Canada, and specifically in Ontario. And so there's massive interest, obviously, in the game. So let's start here. Regarding Patrick Mahomes and concussion protocol, like, what specifically will be going on with him over the next couple of days? What should sort of NFL fans be thinking about prior to whether he will or will not play come Sunday?
Well, as you know, but for the benefit of your listeners, now that he is in the protocol, this is not an issue that is simply up to the team-employed physician. It is up to an independent physician to make certain assessments and decisions. So I think people should understand that this is not going to be a strictly, let's get him on the field. And some teams might push to do that more than other teams. Some might be more hesitant than other teams. This is now out of the hands of the team doctor. Certainly the team doctor is going to be looking at Patrick and involved with this, but ultimately this is going to turn on information provided by and a decision made by someone who's independent. And I think that's smart, to the extent the league is looking to enforce and advance safety rules. Independence is good in that circumstance. The answer is, how the heck do we know? It's Monday. They're not playing till Sunday. He's going to be evaluated quite a bit, and a decision will be made perhaps not until the day before the game. So they've got to prepare both quarterbacks.
All right. The Bills defense is getting a lot of credit with containing Lamar Jackson, and rightly so. It's the second time in the span of a year, 13 months, I think, to be exact, that they've done a really good job of shutting him down. Clearly, Patrick Mahomes is a different, dealing with him is a different matter than dealing with Lamar Jackson. But what could you see the Bills, Amy, taking away from their win over Baltimore and applying to that game against Kansas City and against Patrick Mahomes?
Well, you're absolutely right. Of course, they are two entirely different quarterbacks, both very, very skilled, both very good quarterbacks. But the word which comes to my mind every time I watch Patrick play is magical. There's just something magical about some of the things he does on the field. As far as the Buffalo Bills, play with that same level of intensity. The Bills are playing with a passion and an intensity that's going to serve them well, irrespective of who is at quarterback. But they are going to have a big, big, big task, not simply in terms of Mahomes should he play, but all of those weapons around Mahomes. Speed at every position, terrific skill players. It's going to be a daunting challenge, and it's on the road. Now, look, I've shared this with you men before. I'll share it again. The two roughest, toughest, hardest road environments in my experience during my years in the league were Kansas City and Buffalo, and the game this week will be in Kansas City. Clearly not the same environment as when that stadium is full to capacity, but it will be a bigger challenge for Buffalo to be on the road than if Buffalo was at home.
Amy, we talked to Joe Biscaglia, who covers the Bills for The Athletic, earlier, and you obviously have watched both the Bills and the Chiefs. Again, we're not going to know obviously until Sunday, but it seems that the Bills' roadmap, or maybe perhaps the Bills' only roadmap, to winning is to try to get into a shootout with the Chiefs, which obviously is probably insane advice given, like you said, just how much skill, position, or players the Chiefs have. But the Bills are not built to bleed the clock. It's not the Titans. They don't have a Derrick Henry. And so when you're looking at this game in terms of a sort of a matchup versus matchup, if you were going to try to make the argument for the Bills winning, do you agree with me and see them as the way to go is to sort of go high octane? Or maybe where, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you see a way the Bills could win some kind of possession game, keeping it away from Mahomes.
Well, you may be right, and we'll see, but my initial instinct is, yikes, the last team I want to be in a shootout with is an Andy Reid-coached, Patrick Mahomes quarterbacked, should he be the quarterback, team. That's a tough, tough shootout in which to find oneself. Both good quarterbacks, both can throw a tremendous deep ball, but I don't want to get in a shootout with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. I just don't want to.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking watching that game and that call that Andy Reid made with Chad Henne, and I loved Andy Reid's comments after the game, essentially saying, well, you know, it's amazing, but when you win a championship, you can kind of do stuff. You know, there's a freedom that comes with winning a championship. Tell me a little bit about, Amy, about the relationship between coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, and a guy like Chad Henne. Like, nobody, I mean, let's face it, when he comes into the game, it's not necessarily a positive situation, yet he ends up making a crucial play that, you know, I don't say it saved the game, but it certainly extended their ability to run out the clock and to win that game. I just think that says something about an organization's culture, that you would make that call and put it in the hands of Chad Henne.
Well, I think it says everything you just said and then some. And let me tell you exactly what front office executives and front office staff do when a call like that is made and you realize what's going on. You're sitting upstairs and you're watching the game and you're saying very loudly, no, 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 no. And then the pass is completed and you're like, yeah, I knew we should have called that. Or, yeah, I wasn't worried. Because that's one of those no, 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 oh, yeah, that worked calls. You know what? I appreciate Andy's honesty in the comment you just noted he made about that call. And the other thing is, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. He's now going to be the head coach of a team which is going to be hosting its third championship game. Someone else did that when they were a coach in Philadelphia. Oh, yeah, that was Andy. He deserves the benefit of the doubt when making those calls. Look, I would have been panicked if I saw that call being made. I would have gone with a much more conservative play call. I would have gone for it, but much more conservatively. But he gets the benefit of the doubt, and I think that speaks to the organizational issue you're referencing. They work with one another. They know one another. They trust one another, and they recognize that they each deserve the benefit of the doubt, whether it's Andy or Eric or someone else on that staff. And I know that goes all the way up to ownership. I know that that's a tone that is set by Clark Hunt, who I think does a tremendous job in that regard.
Amy, the NFL is in a situation where no matter what matchup they get in the Super Bowl, it's going to be good. You know, the Bills and Chiefs are interesting stories for different reasons. The Chiefs obviously have Patrick Mahomes, chance to defend the Super Bowl, which is just in itself an interesting story. And obviously Green Bay and the Bucs have the two legendary quarterbacks. The Packers are a historic team. And Tom Brady, you know, trying to win a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay at home, that's sort of an insane storyline. So I just named even the top line ones, and there's a million others. What will be interesting to me, and I wonder if you have any thoughts prior to the game, is what the Super Bowl will sort of feel like for viewers without a sold-out stadium, whatever the NFL ends up with, 20,000, 25,000. We've never seen that before, and it's going to be a challenge for television, but I also wonder if it's just going to be very surreal for viewers. Like, I wonder if they will feel or process the Super Bowl the same way, given that the stadium will not be close to filled, even if the television network, in this case CBS, your network, you know, doesn't show the swaths of empty seats. What's your thought on that?
My thought is that we've shown that we're an adaptable species. We've shown that over the last 10, 11 months, however long it's been. I know down here in California, we got our safer at home order right about the middle of March, so 10 months ago. Look, we're an adaptable people, some more adaptable than others, or an adaptable species, I should say. Will it be different? Absolutely. But my gosh, life is different right now. So much that we are doing and seeing is different right now that I think it will, you know, people are just going to process it because we're used to doing that over the last 10 months to a year, given all that is going on. So, you know, the stadium's not going to be full, but look, we're watching games in Kansas City and Buffalo and Green Bay. We're used to seeing those stadiums full. They're not. There's also not going to be a lot of what we're used to seeing. You're not going to see at the end of that game teams and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people rush the field and hug one another and grab the trophy and toss it around. We're not going to see that either. So will it be very, very different? Absolutely. Are we adjusting to life, which is very, very different? Yeah, we are.
Amy, last one for me, and then we will let you scoot. 5 years down the road, presuming Drew Brees is not going to come back next year, what will be the first word that comes to your mind when people mention the name Drew Brees?
Tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous. Tremendously talented quarterback. So I'll go with not just the first word, but I'll finish the sentence, a tremendously talented quarterback. And he did more for that team than simply quarterback it on the field. He's been a part of that team for a very, very, very long time. And as I said, he's a very talented quarterback.
Amy, good stuff. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Take care. It's Amy Trask, NFL analyst with CBS Sports. And, yeah, an important part of that team and also an important part of that community.
Yeah, I don't know. I apologize for who said this, because I think it's the Sportsnet person who suggested that Drew Brees is the, how was it phrased? No American athlete is more connected to a city the way Drew Brees is connected to New Orleans. And I thought that was really, really interesting. Obviously, Katrina plays a big factor there, Jeff. The only one I thought where you might have an interesting conversation is LeBron and Akron / Cleveland. But I think that's a fair statement, just given what that team meant after Katrina and how much Drew Brees has contributed from his foundations and stuff like that to the rebuilding of that city.
Yeah, and I think Drew Brees did it all in New Orleans, right? You know, LeBron... I would be willing to bet that
great point. Yep.
I would be willing to bet that 5 years after LeBron leaves, there will be as many people who think of LeBron for his Lakers days as his Cavaliers days. Because I whatever he does with LA, just by virtue of the fact it's LA, is going to overwhelm what he did with Cleveland. Even though,
yeah, although he did build the school in Cleveland is maybe as big a legacy for LeBron as. Or it's an Akron as anything else. But I know what you're saying. Like,
yeah, sports
fans. The fact is he's won titles elsewhere, and that alone makes him kind of really not belonging to one city, where Drew Brees, if you think Drew Brees, right, you just think New Orleans.
Exactly,
right away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, that and I don't know, Derek Jeter, maybe?
Maybe
Derek Jeter. I'm trying to think of baseball. Baseball equivalents. You know, I mean, you go back in the day, Babe Ruth and yada, yada.
In addition... But, it's got to be success on the field and then success or philanthropy outside of the field.
So yeah.
It's not a big list.
Probably. No, it really isn't. I'm trying to, Cleveland, I'm looking at cities where you sort of, Jim Kelly, maybe? Maybe Jim Kelly?
Maybe
Jim
he's,
Kelly?
He'd be in the, you know, it's been a while, but yeah, he would sort of be in the conversation. You know, I thought like Gretzky and Edmonton, but it's again, he's,
yeah.
As many people remember Gretzky in LA, I think, at this point, so you can't really say him either.
No, it's a
good question.
It's a very good question. It's a fascinating argument to come up with players.
Steph Curry in Oakland?
Who?
Steph Curry in Oakland?
Steph Curry. But he plays in San Francisco now. Like,
yeah,
Bay Area.
True. So there you go. Exactly.
Bay Area, and he's not, you know, I'll tell you what, Ricky Henderson in Oakland, even though he bounced around, I mean, there are still, you know, there are still murals of Ricky Henderson in downtown Oakland. So maybe Ricky, But it's a fascinating, it really is a fascinating
discussion. Yeah. You want a great one, an old school great one, and again, we're going way back now, Clemente in Pittsburgh.
Yes. You know what? That may be, and that's kind of recent enough. I'm that may be it. That may be the guy that that we need to think of. Fernando Valenzuela and the Dodgers maybe, but Clemente in Pittsburgh definitely.
Yeah, because again, the off-the-field things are what, that's where Brees is different than most other modern athletes.
Yes.
His connection to a city is not just the success that they had, which is obviously great. It's what he represented and literally did off the field.
Yeah.
And that's where probably the list is not very long.
And I think maybe it resonates with the fact that it isn't in one of the major, you know, like what, it isn't in LA,
yeah.
it isn't in New York, it isn't in Chicago. We are going to, who do we have coming up? Oh, we got the lovely and talented Sid Sixera. Now, I can't remember, Derek, do I have to be excited that we have Sid coming on? Will that piss off Tim, or do I have to be not excited? Who do we have? Do we have Tim? Do we have Sid? Do we know? Wait, it's Sid. Sid! Oh, my God. So we'll be joined by Sid Sixera when we come back. I don't know where this is going to go. Is that me, Derek? What are you juicing drops?
Sid!
Oh, my God. Jeez. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I don't want to say that people are jonesing for hockey, but I don't know how often this has happened. The Saturday Hockey Night in Canada Prime crushed the NFL in ratings in Canada, which is intriguing to say the least. Do we have Sydney? We have Sid Sixera with us. What up, Sid?
What's going on?
Hey, man. Everything good?
Those are interesting ratings. Notes you got there. That's fascinating.
That surprised me. I'm just I had them in front of me and now magically they disappear. But that was over 2 million, I believe.
Whew. God love all the hockey.
Yeah, the hockey's fun.
I love it. I wasn't moving away from that Bills game Saturday.
I didn't watch a second of it.
Sorry.
I gotta tell you the truth.
It was an interesting game, man. You know what? You got to stop with this fake I hate football stuff.
It's not fake hate.
It's not fake, Sid.
No, I get enough American in my life. I don't need to. I don't need to watch football. Sorry, I get enough of it during the year. I don't need any more. I've reached my peak. I'm done with America. I reached that about 4 months ago. So I find that if I can cleanse my soul of it, it makes me a happier man.
What does not watching those games have anything to do with cleansing your soul of
anything? Because it's everything bad about the U.S. It's committee meetings and no action.
There's no meat on the bone. These matchups this Sunday are unbelievable.
It's big dudes standing around doing nothing. How much actual action is there in a football game? 5 minutes?
Dutch, they marked out the time a couple of years ago, right? What's the actual action in an NFL game?
It's 9 minutes.
How can football compare to a 9-4, seventh inning of a baseball game?
See, but here's
game.
The thing now. See,
here comes John Gibbons making another pitching
change. Here's the thing, though, Deitch. You know what the difference is? No, here's the thing. I don't care if you like baseball or not. Most baseball fans don't care if you like it or not. It's football fans who can't stand. Football fans are like golfers. They don't understand when people doesn't like their sport. It is love my sport. I don't give a rat's ass if anybody likes baseball. If anybody likes baseball.
You don't think most sports fans are like that, though? Like, they want you to like their sport, or they get ticked off if you don't like their sport?
Yeah, but I don't think people in the media should be.
No, I agree. I agree.
Well, you're ticked off.
No, I'm just playing the shtick here. I like baseball and I like football.
There's no shtick.
And he's playing the shtick while bathing. Congratulations, Dice. The first ever
like
radio
Jesus,
broadcast.
It sounds like you're in a bathtub.
In the tub.
Yeah, I don't know
this
what's
is history.
I apologize to the audience today. Something is clearly like up with my sound here, and I'll figure it out. I don't know if it's my kid. My kids may be on my internet. We may have some Wi-Fi issues. I'll figure it out by tomorrow.
You're missing good football. Blair.
Outside. It's going to be a remote.
I pray you watch Sunday. I hope this is a fake shtick because this, they don't have a bad Super Bowl match.
He definitely watched.
I did not.
I think he watched. Deitch, I'm with you. I think he watched a little bit.
This radio station, Sid,
has a history of guys who claim not to watch stuff and
they
watch
stuff. No, that's not true. People who know me know that I don't watch stuff.
I know.
People who know me know that I don't watch stuff when I say I don't watch it. I just don't. You know what? I discovered Red Zone. Red Zone's perfect this year. It's a perfect football entertainment package for people who don't want to feel like they need a shower, right? Because you can just watch the stuff. You can watch the scoring and the drives, and that's it. That's all.
Speaking of shower, is the shower next, Deitch? I heard a courtesy flush, so I think a couple
Sid,
seconds
forget
ago.
Forget about What's me. Next? Who do you got on today? Give us your guest star.
Mike Feuda, who's been an executive in hockey for decades. We'll
He's
talk
awesome.
To him. And Rich Gannon. We'll talk about everything Jeff hates. Next.
There you go. What the hell? It's all falling apart.
Wow. See you guys. Get scared.
Yeah. 6-0 scared. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. I'm just kidding. Okay, I watched a little bit of the Bills game. A little bit of the Bills game. Just a little bit. Tiny bit. Have a great night. We'll chat tomorrow.